the whole Holocaust fairy tale, it is a lot like a religion, you can say. And it's also built upon emotional arguments instead of logic ones. Because with logic arguments, the whole thing gets teared up apart within no time at all. But with emotions, when you're able to steer people up, when you're able to get them to feel, to empathize, to cry over these Jews, then they are far more easy to convince without ever question what they have heard.
Welcome to Leadership Perspective, the official podcast of the Nordic Resistance Movement, in which Simon Lindberg, the movement's leader, voices the organization's positions and thoughts. My name is Fredrik Weideland, and with me I have, of course, Simon Lindberg. Greetings.
Hello, hello, Fredrik and all the listeners.
How are you doing?
I'm just doing fine, thanks.
Yeah, me too. Before we begin, I want to say that this podcast is from now on a bi-monthly one. So since the last episode, it was 2 months ago. And well, in the meantime, I have broadcast other radio shows, but I can admit that I had some abstinence. So I don't know about you. Is it the same?
Both yes and no. Times move on so quickly. So, and also, as you said, we have our other podcast, the Swedish one, and Ledarperspektiv and so on. But yeah, it is a little bit different to talk English for a whole show.
Yeah. So we didn't miss the Leadership Perspective.
As said, it's interesting to do it in English as well. But I have work enough anyway. But hopefully the listeners have missed us.
Yeah. Yeah,
and of course. And to add on, this is episode number 13, because you didn't say that, so I just fills in.
Yes, and I want to talk a little about the crazy times we live in, and how important it is for us to adapt to new circumstances. We also have corona restrictions in Sweden, and this of course, affects all political movements that are not part of the system. And it particularly affects an organization such as the Nordic Resistance Movement, because our main arena is the street. The parties and organizations that are cherished by the system, they can reach out with their message through mainstream media. And that door is, of course, closed to us because we are not directly friends with the Jews in the media. And sure, you can try to get the message out on the streets, but you have to take into account how many of the people are on the streets, a big audience, if they will consider it unnecessary for us to gather in large groups. And you also know that there are new laws, which has never been used, but which will be used against you as a dissident. In the Nordic countries, it is more or less only the Nordic Resistance Movement that is currently conducting activism on a regular basis. In Denmark, there are also anti-corona activists who held a quite large demonstration at the end of January. But in Sweden, where we live, it is really just us. So, what we have done under the corona restriction is that we have reduced public activism a little. It still occurs, but not as often, because it is not as effective as before. So instead, we have focused on more spectacular actions. Now I know you, Lindberg, will talk about this a little later, so I keep myself brief. But we have done mobile banner action, where we attached banners to a trailer and drove through the city. We have carried out laser actions with specific messages, which gave massive Oy Vey headlines in the media when we did it during the Holocaust Remembrance Day. We climbed the Bonner Scraper, which is the headquarters of the Jewish press and the symbol of Jewish power in Sweden, and urged people to boycott the lying press, the Lügenpresse. We have activists rappelling down mountain walls across the highway to attach banners with our messages. And I think the only way to get them down, the banners, is to close the highway. So really good. Also, we have focused more on wilderness activities, martial arts training, and similar activities. So while we're still fighting the system's restrictions, we are also adapting our way of conducting activism. And we are doing it in all nests, and the nests are doing a great job at it. So we're trying new things that we will also be able to use in the future. And in these crazy times, we also have the deplatformation. You all know about it. And we, Nordisk Radio, have, as you know, been showed from Spreaker, and now we are on peertube.se, which is a platform that we control. And we planned for this a long time ago, because we knew this time would come. Also, in recent years, we have become very good at adapting. They delete our bank accounts, we switch to cash and cryptocurrencies, which has worked extremely well for us, actually. The police are trying to sabotage our demonstrations. We are doing blixt demonstration instead. In 2012, we built our own media, Nordfront, because we knew that in the future we would never have access to mainstream media, that we would never be described objectively. So now we have hundreds of thousands of our own readers every month, and can say a big fuck you when the Jewish media contacts us for a comment. So, survival of the fittest, adapt to new situations, and create platforms that you control. Then you can laugh right in their faces and continue the struggle. And comments from Simon Lindberg on this?
Yes, no, of course, I agree with everything you said. And it is, if you are an oppositional organization, that we are opposition for real, then you will get fought by the system. It will always be some kind of cat and mouse game, where they are trying to shut you down, quiet you, and you must adjust to get around that. You must find new ways. If they put down an obstacle here, you must go the other way instead. If you face a wall there, you must climb over the wall, and so on. Yeah, we are quite good at it, and we get even better in it with time. And as you said, now during both Corona and the social media shutdown, we have also had to find out new ways, which we have done at least quite successfully.
Yeah, and the reason I say this is because we have comrades from other organizations that perhaps could learn from what we say and our experiences, and maybe we can learn from them. We have now in France, they trying to dissolve the Generation Identitaire I hope that they find new ways to continue the fight, and yeah, let us know.
Yes, but the important lesson of all you have said is, of course, never let them win. Just find new ways around the obstacles, and that will make you stronger in the end of the day. All repression makes you stronger in the end.
Yeah, and laugh right at the repression and the suppressors.
Yes.
Yes, I hope that I have not sabotaged your what has happened in the struggle segment, because I talk about activism. But yeah, what has happened in the struggle since the last episode? We record this episode a little bit earlier than usual, so this time it will be since the 6th of January till now, when we record it in the middle of February.
Yes, some of it will be an echo of what you said, I think, but yes. I do it as usual anyway. There has been somewhere between 200 and 250 activities carried out in the Nordic countries during this time period. And among these, a lot of different things as usual, with everything from putting up stickers and giving lectures to skiing and rugby in the snow. There has been a lot of outdoor wilderness activities where our members have learned how to survive during Nordic winter time with plenty of minus degrees outside, which definitely can be a challenge. And then the laser activism I talked about in the last episode, that also you mentioned, has been used on several occasions since then. Gigantic T-runes have been displayed on famous buildings and other places in many cities. And then it was also used, as you mentioned, on the so-called Holocaust Memorial Day. And there it was used to display the message, "The Holocaust is a hoax," on a famous bridge in Gothenburg. And it was this message was visible for probably thousands of people. And it also gave headlines in the papers, as you said.
Yeah, I live in Gothenburg, or Gothenburg area, and I know that this bridge is very central in the city, so it's maybe tens of thousands of people. And yeah, it was good headlines in the media as well.
Mm. Absolutely, and it looked very good with this laser activism there. It really looked like it was some paid message, you know, some paid commercial or something. So it looked very good.
Yeah.
And around this day, the Holahoax Day, there actually has been a lot of activism around all the Nordic countries. Not only this laser activism in Gothenburg, but there has been posters, flyers, and banners everywhere. There was also a huge banner being put up in the most central parts of Stockholm with the message, "Stop the Holocaust of our people." And this, of course, to switch focus from the historical hoax into problems that we're actually facing right here, right now. And on the theme, gigantic banners in Stockholm, actually an even bigger one was put up, as you mentioned, on a skyscraper where the most famous Jewish media family in Sweden, Bonniers, has their headquarters. And the message on this banner was that you also mentioned that we should boycott the Lügenpress and red nationalist media instead. In the Stockholm area, there has also been a widely spread banner campaign with the positive uplifting message, "Love your people." So banners have been put up, very many banners have been put up in several different parts of Stockholm and cities around Stockholm and so on with this message. And another bigger campaign during this time was on the Memorial Day of the massacre in Dresden. Under the theme, "We remember the victims of democracy," public activities was carried out in 10 different cities. Mostly public banner activities, but also public activities where we were standing on the streets in both Denmark and Sweden. And on top of these 10 public activities, also here, banners, flyers, and posters were spread everywhere in all Nordic countries. Other than this, there has been a flash square meeting in the city of Luleå in northern Sweden. There has been this car banner activity that you talked about in the small city of Eksjö.
I really like that.
Yeah.
I hope we will conduct that activism a lot more.
Yeah, at least I loved it because I always love when our activist finds new ways. This has actually been done before at some marketplace in Dalarna. I think they used something common to this at least. So it was not a totally new idea, but at least it was an idea that we hasn't used so many times. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I think they done it in the northern parts as well, but they stayed beside the road.
Mm.
And in this case, they drove through the city.
Yeah.
So combine that with a speech, and it will be great.
Yeah. Like the 30s all over again.
Yeah, yeah.
We are soon at the 30s, so. Then there also has been a banner activity combined with a visit to a local politician's house in the city of Malung. There the people living in Malung got to vote on whether a wind park should be established there or not. And it has been a very heated debate, and the people voted no. They do not want this wind park in Malung. But the politicians decided to run over the people's will and to carry on with the plans anyway. So therefore our activists got there and made some campaign with banners, but also, as said, visiting one of the politicians that are being responsible for them running over the will of the people. So they visit him with a camera and a microphone and confronting him with this, asking what he was doing. And the message on the banner was, the people vote, the politicians are laughing.
Yeah, and one reason that we are we don't have a stance against wind park, but as I read on Nordfront, they wrote an article about the EU. They want to build thousands of wind parks in Sweden because they want the territory with it. So they want our lands, actually. So that's one reason, one argument against these wind parks.
Yeah, and often it is companies residing abroad that is the operators of these wind parks. And so it's foreign companies owning the money of the parks, not the people living there.
But
the main thing here was not even the wind park. The main thing here was that the politicians, as they have done so many times before, they do a vote among the people because they hope that the people will vote as they want. But when the people are being bad people and voting against the politicians, then they do not give a F about the people. Then they do as they please anyway.
Yeah.
So that was the focus of the activity, so to say. But, yeah, as usual, of course, a lot more things than this has happened. But with these things said, I have covered the larger things, except for one last thing that I've saved now till the end. And that was that in an article in the very big English newspaper, The Sun, I was doxed together with ISIS terrorists and spokespersons of Al-Qaeda. And I was doxed to be one of the most dangerous men on the planet. And this news, fake news, whatever you want to call it, was later spread to a lot of other papers as well, also in the Nordic countries. So many Swedish papers, for example, have written about it. And since I am a person living a totally normal and public life, I have work, I have family, I have never killed anyone, I have never committed any terrorist acts. Actually, I have been arrested on occasions and so on. I have been convicted of smaller things, but I actually never been to a real prison sentence in my life. So to get doxed as one of the world's most dangerous men is, of course, very spectacular. But also at the same time, it is a fantastic proof of how much this world order actually fear the Nordic resistance movement, of how much they actually believes in our growth potential, in the potential for a national socialist revolutionary organization to become popular among the masses. And at the same time as all of this is a bit laughable and it feels very, very, very surreal to get on this list as one of the most dangerous men in the world, it is of course also a huge honor and a great proof of that my life actually means something, that I actually make a difference. So, yeah, I read this article with mixed feelings of both absurdness and a huge sense of pride, actually. But however, this was a few weeks back now. This article was launched, and we have many other topics to cover in this show. So instead of talking more about this, even though it is a very interesting subject, I recommend everyone to read the article I wrote, The Nordic's Most Dangerous Man Speaks, on nordicresistancemovement.org, or listen to Nordic Frontier episode 177, where I am interviewed about the whole thing. And of course, we put the links into the article of this episode, so you can find it easily. But yeah, unless you have anything to add, I believe we are done with this segment.
Yes, but in addition to you being the world's most dangerous man, or one of the most dangerous men, I read also on Nordfront an article today, which have the headline in Swedish, by a translated to "The resistance movement has become an international symbol of criticism of Jewish power." So the article is about they had a Nazi demonstration in Spain the other day, and the Jerusalem Post wrote about it, and illustrating their articles with a picture on Nordic resistance movement. And also we have the World Jewish Congress writing about anti-Semitism worldwide, illustrating with a picture of the Nordic resistance movement and stuff like that. So you other guys, you must step up.
Yeah, also that is a big honor, of course.
Yeah, really big honor.
Our enemies dislike us, that's for sure.
Yeah, old Adi would be proud of us. Yeah, but yes, we continue to ideological, tactical question, and it will be about the Holocaust, because the past month has, as you said, also included activism during the so-called Holocaust Remembrance Day, where we trumpeted that the Holocaust is a scam. I thought it would be a good opportunity to go into that topic a little more in this episode. So my first question to you is, how can the resistance movement claim that the Holocaust is a hoax?
It is actually quite simple, because the answer to the question is that there are no proof. I have read several books from both sides. I have read articles, viewed documentaries. I've even listened a couple of times to so-called survivors giving lectures on the topics. And nowhere, not once, have I been presented with any actual evidence of that there was a plan that was also carried out to extinct the Jewish people living within the great German borders, and that they also finished off 6 million of them by the usage of the gas Cyclone B. There are no technical evidences. There are no trustworthy witnesses. There are no found documentation. There is no proof at all. In Germany, they had a very organized regime back then, and to be able to kill 6 million Jews without any written documentation and without anything being said about it would be impossible, unless you believe in what some so-called experts said, that they planned and conducted the whole thing through telepathy. Also, the math don't add up, not even near. The number of living Jews in the world were bigger after the war than before the war, according to Jews themselves and their official numbers. And there was even more German Jews that were looking for economic compensation for having survived the Holocaust than there were Jews living in Germany when Hitler rose to power. And if we go on with the math, we can also see that even with today's modern crematoriums, it would have been impossible to get rid of that many bodies in that short time. A modern crematory of today manages around 8 bodies per 24 hours. And according to the official Holocaust propaganda, several thousands of bodies was cremated each day in Auschwitz. And the number of how many actually died is also something that had been changed several times during history. From the beginning, it was, example, claimed that 4 million Jews were killed in Auschwitz alone. And the final number, 6 million in total in all of the camps, can also be mentioned is a very, very special number in the Jewish history. And this is actually not the first time throughout history where that exact number have been claimed when it comes to murdered Jews. And if I continue a little bit more, also Cyclone B, that is the killing method said to have taken out most of the Jews, it is quite a terrible choice if you want to kill millions of people. The gas is poisonous and deadly, but it's quite slow working. And it also takes a good amount of ventilation afterwards before it would be safe to enter the room by guards, for example. And the very flammable gas, Cyclone B, does not work, like some of witnesses have said, that they just pour it on, all drop dead, and then the guards safely enters a minute later with a cigarette in their hand and without any protection at all to take care of the dead bodies. That do not work at all with Cyclone B. And the last thing that I would like to say now already is that there were movie theaters in several of the camps. There were even swimming pools in some of the camps. The prisoners had money. They could buy stuff with this money within the camps. And the guards that treated the prisoners badly, they got punished. At least one guard were sentenced with capital punishment by the German National Socialists. And why would they bother to do all these things for the prisoners? Why would they kill one of their own for treating the prisoners bad if they just were there to be killed anyway? It makes no sense at all. As said, there are no proof of that the Holocaust has existed. None at all. And if you put billions of dollars on trying to prove something, but without being able to do so, then the only conclusion by a rational human being must be that it has not happened. So the Holocaust is a hoax. Dot.
Yeah, and when you talk about telepathy, are you referring to Raoul Hilberg?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and he is a historian, and he is described in the Swedish press. He's described as the world's foremost expert in the Holocaust. He spoke about the telepathy thing in when he was called to be a witness in the trial against Ernst Sindel, 1985. So he said that they used telepathy or an incredible meeting of minds, a consensus mind reading by a far-flung bureaucracy. And he also said that there were 300,000 Germans engaged in the Holocaust. So the ones planning it, the ones conducting it on all the camps and so forth. Is that rational? So it was 300,000 doing the killing, and no one spoke about it. Well, isn't that a conspiracy theory?
Absolutely.
It's totally crazy.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, but to move on, you can take all the survivors who testified then. The all Auschwitz and Treblinka camps, they are open to visitors. What do you say about these?
The so-called survivors, they are my personal favorite topic when it comes to the Holocaust, because there are so many extremely imaginative stories that, by the way, also contradict each other, some of them. And there are so many called survivors where it has been proven that they didn't even were in Germany during the time of the Holocaust. And among the witnesses that are not full of totally exaggerated lies, they have never seen any killings themselves. They only witness about the things that they have heard about. They witness about rumors they heard, that they saw smoke from the chimneys, and then they understood it must come from dead bodies. There is no other possible ways there can come smoke out of the chimneys. But
no, never.
No,
never.
But they have not seen anyone being killed with their own eyes by themselves. And I think that among the survivors, there are two kind of persons. There are both compulsive liars that want to be the center of attention, storytellers that have gotten rich and famous by telling their lies and selling books about their lies and so on. But I also believe that there are quite many totally ordinary prisoners there that just were in the camps and that also have been brainwashed themselves to believe in the Holocaust. And then afterwards, they go back in their memory and they try to find things throughout their own history that actually proves everything. They try to connect things that they haven't thought about from the beginning. But now when they heard that, aha, it was a lot of people died, then there must be, the smoke from the chimneys must come from that and so on. So I do not believe that it is a gigantic conspiracy where all the survivors meet up each year and talk about how they will proceed. It's not that kind of conspiracy. It's just that some people, they lie, they are compulsive liars, and some other people, they have themselves been brainwashed to believe what they actually say.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the camps then, like Auschwitz and Treblinka and many more, we, of course, do not deny that these camps existed. We only deny that they were extermination camps. The camps were used as labor camps. They were used to put the Jews that were to be expelled from the German Reich somewhere in the meantime as they figure out and also negotiated with other countries on where to send the Jews. And we do not deny that Germany wanted to get rid of the Jews to be able to secure their own racial existence. What we are denying is that they wanted to do it by any means and that they conducted a genocide to succeed with it. We do not either deny that people actually died in the camps. Typhus was widely spread during the time being, and it was a full-scale war going on. And of course, prisoners trying to riot or escape was dealt with accordingly. But there were no systematic and no planned extermination, and that 6 million died is an extremely exaggerated number. What you can see in these camps, if you visit them today, are not proof of any genocide. Piles of old shoes and small rooms claim to be gas chambers, but without any remains of gas in them, and with big holes in them. This do not prove anything.
But we also have the testimonies of the Germans themselves during the Nuremberg trials. I'm thinking, for example, of the written testimony of Rudolf Huss, who was commander in Auschwitz, and he admitted everything.
Yeah, many of these testimonies, yeah, even the most part of them, were written testimonies. that was actually written down by the investigators themselves and only signed by the ones that were interrogated. And often the sign came after massive torture. Heavy violence was used against the ones interrogated. Among other things, it is known that they smashed their balls with hammers. Also, they used threats to send their wives and kids to labor camps in Siberia. So, just sign here and we will stop the torture of you. And if you don't sign, except for the continued torture, your kids will also be sent to Siberia to work and being abused for the rest of their lives. So that's where many signs came from. And when it comes to Rudolf Höss, he signed a paper stating that he knew about 3 million Jews that was killed in Auschwitz alone. So, tortured and threatened, he admitted that he had knowledge of 3 million Jews that has been killed in Auschwitz. And since the official number nowadays is that 1 million was killed in Auschwitz, it clearly shows that these persons under this kind of torture and threats, they would sign anything. And it's not so strange either. And then after the trials, these people, of course, have made understood that if they stuck with their false testimonies, they would be accepted and embraced by the system. They could even earn money on it. But if they instead would go back to the truth, they would face enormous repression. Maybe even their lives would have been taken. And that is, for example, how Rudolf Höss' autobiography came to existence. He chose to stick with the lies because it was the easiest way.
Mm-hmm. Regarding these affidavits, this before written testimonies, you signed your name on it. And I think in the case of the Jews, it was the same for them, that they have already written testimonies and they put a sign on it. And I think it's interesting that they put so high value of these testimonies, these written affidavits, but they are not doing that in the case of the election fraud in the USA. Mm. Because that was also thousands of affidavits saying that, this is a fraud. So and then they were persecuted by the media. So in some case, this testimonies is proof of everything, and in other cases, proof of nothing.
Sounds like ordinary democratic logics.
Yeah, yeah, it must be that. Yes, but from all these survivor stories, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, there actually are several really amusing ones. The probably most famous ones are, of course, the soap and the lampshades. That the National Socialists, they made soap from the fat of the dead Jews, and that they sued lampshades of their skin. And this was actually part of the official Holocaust story for quite some time before proofs against it were so overwhelming that they had to back down and take it away also from the official story. But even so, there still today are some people who actually believes in this bullshit. It actually happens that when you discuss Holocaust with people, they actually themselves bring up this example that they even made soap and lampshades of them, but yeah, it's not even in the official story anymore. So that is a little bit funny. Apart from this, my all-time favorite story is the story about the eagle and the bear. According to this insane story, every day the guards at the camp, they picked one Jew on random. And then they locked him up in a huge cage. And in this cage, there was also a bear and an eagle. And then everyone sat and had their breakfast, watching how the eagle scratched out the Jew's eyes and then how the bear ate up the Jew. So this was a routine done every day in this camp. That's a really fun one, actually. There is no logic at all.
But is this story published in the media for real?
Yes.
On a serious basis?
Yes, it is. It is from some witness or some survivor that was telling this to the kids in schools or whatever. I don't really remember it. I know we have it backed up on our news page, Nordfront, in some article about this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We have been written a lot about this Holocaust survivor stories. It's quite funny.
Yeah, yeah. It's comic at its highest level, actually. And another really funny thing is the so-called survivor that claims that he has survived being gassed. Not only one time, not two times, no, but six times the evil Nazis tried to gas this poor Jew in the gas chamber, but miraculously he survived every time. Can it be that they actually not were trying to kill him, and that's why he did not die six times? Or was it that they were so bad doing their work that they actually failed six times? And think about how long the Holocaust must have taken then, even longer than. Then the more math will be even more impossible than it already is if they should gas every Jew six times. Or maybe this narcissist, you actually believe that he's some kind of avatar or something protected by God. I don't know, but it's very funny that you can claim to be gassed six times and survived. So, these are extremely hilarious, and there are many, many more. There are about electrocuted swimming pools. There are jerk-off machines. There are...
yes.
Enormous...
sorry, it's so bizarre.
And there are enormous gas chambers that had a size of 8 soccer fields combined. And yet there is no trace whatsoever of these gigantic buildings that would have been seen from the moon. There are no evidence of them today, and so on. So, yeah, there are enormously many funny stories.
Yeah, but since there is no evidence, at least no real technical evidence, how do you think it may be that no one besides us sees through this scam?
Yeah, first of all, this is a highly stigmatized subject. And secondly, you see what you want to see. Because if the school teaches you the same thing as you see in all the Hollywood movies and all the established documentaries, why should you even question it? Everyone that actually starts to question the Holocaust and find out information on their own, they see the cracks very, very soon. The problem is not that. The problem is that they don't question it at all. They only accept it, and they accept what they are fed with, like there impossibly could be some other side of the story. They don't even think that there could be. They don't even think that it is possible it could be another way. It's just an ultimate truth. An important thing is, of course, that this also goes for the one teaching it and spreading the lie. Just like I said before about the survivors, I also say, again, to clarify that we are not tinfoil hats believing in some crazy conspiracy theory, because, of course, also the one teaching it today, they do so because they believe in this, because they have never questioned it. So it's not that we... believe that millions of people knows the truth but admittedly lies about it. Of course, there maybe are some at the absolute top of the pyramid of society that knows and keeps their mouth shut, but most of the people that spread these lies, they do not know that they are lying. They just preach what they have been told, much like in a religion, I would say. Because if you can get people to believe for real that Jesus split the ocean or was able to transform blood into wine, and without ever questioning this at all, then of course you could also create a doctrine where millions of Jews were killed by super evil Nazis without question that. So the whole Holocaust fairy tale, it is a lot like a religion, you can say. And it's also built upon emotional arguments instead of logic ones. Because with logic arguments, the whole thing gets teared up apart within no time at all. But with emotions, when you're able to steer people up, when you're able to get them to feel, to empathize, to cry over these Jews, then they are far more easy to convince without ever question what they have heard.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the good things about being an organization like ours is that we meet up with people on the streets, talking to them, and in some cases or many cases, they can say to us what they won't say on their working places or to the neighbors and stuff like that. And I, like you, have been around in the struggle for many, many years, and I can see at least a big raise of awareness in especially the youth, because I think that the youth, they don't read the Jewish press like well, people in our age or older, or they don't watch television like people in our age do, but they read things on forums or Telegram, Reddit, Twitter, I don't know. They get the information from other places that are not as controlled as the Jewish media are. So they can find the truth better than older people. Do you agree?
Yes, that is most certainly true. And it's a very, very good truth indeed. There might be other circumstances also, meaning that the more the years go, the less people seem to care about it and so on. But
yeah,
for sure, I agree with you. It's not that if you look at people in our age, or even worse, among people older than us, then this is a cemented thing. You don't touch the Holocaust question. It's holy, almost holy grail.
Yeah, you cannot talk to them. They cannot realize basic truth or basic illogical things about the story.
Yeah, but then again, we come to these things, as I said, that the Holocaust is preached like a religion, not like a logic thing. Because then it doesn't matter if things do not add up, because the doctrine says it is like this, and then it is like this. So, yeah.
Yeah, but like you said, it's a good thing, and well, people have a bigger awareness to this question. They are much more Jew-wise, especially the youth.
Mm.
So it's a good thing for our movement. And also to add, I think we in Sweden have been very good at informing people about the Jewish power and the Holocaust. We've done that for several years on Nordfront.
Mm.
So, yeah, but why did they invent the Holocaust? What do they have to gain from such a thing?
The Jews of the world, but also their henchmen within the system, or the worldwide system, you could say, has won insanely much on the Holocaust, actually. First of all, the Allied forces that won the Second World War, they were no angels. They were no nice people. They were not the good guys that they are portrayed as in popular culture. No, the Allied, they actually dropped atom bombs over Japan, killing hundreds of thousands of civilians, killing the nature and killing Earth itself. They firebombed refugees, women and children in Dresden and many other German towns, knowingly tried to kill as many civilians as possible. And the Red Army, they had conducted their own genocides, like, for example, Holodomor, where millions of Ukrainians starved to death, and so on. And with the invention of Holocaust, none of these things got the attention it would have deserved. Instead, all of the world's focus were put on Germany. They were the evil ones, and the Allied forces of capitalists and communists, they were the nice guys. I mean, just look at how many books, documentaries, and movies there has been made about Dresden, Holodomor, and Nagasaki, and compare it to how many has been made about the Holocaust. It is an enormous industry, the Holocaust. How many school children gets to visit Holodomor and learn about the crimes of communism? None. How many Japanese survivors are being brought to the schools to tell the pupils of their horrific experience from the Democrats' bombings? None. It's just Auschwitz, Nazis, and the Jews all the way. And secondly, this got the Jews their own country. The Holocaust is the whole reason, or at least the whole official reason, for America to steal land from the Palestinians and give it away to the Jews so they could have their Israel. And of course, still today, the German state pays millions and millions of damage fees to the so-called survivors and their heir. And thirdly, and most importantly, the Holocaust is used as the probably most powerful tool of them all to keep the Goyim down. Every time someone accuses the Jews of anything, they will be hit in the head with anti-Semitism and the Holocaust. Every time some nationalist speaks out loud, try to awake their slumbering masses, they will be hit with the sledgehammer of Holocaust. And no ordinary people, they would like to bear the burden of millions of deaths. No one would like to represent the evil of the world. And therefore, in many cases, it successfully quiets ordinary people, this argument. So you say the Jews owns the banks and media? Well, that is anti-Semitic, and you know, anti-Semitism is responsible for millions of deaths during the Holocaust. And then the white man apologizes and shuts up, and the Jews buys up another bank and another newspaper. So you say that immigration is not good for your country? Well, that is racism. And you know, racism is responsible for millions of deaths during the Holocaust. And then the white man apologizes, shuts up, while more Africans pours over the border. And so on. So here is three enormously big things that they have won with the creation of Holocaust.
Yeah, and the psychological warfare, it's very, very effective.
Hmm.
Yeah. And, well, you mentioned the atrocities and the war crimes from the democratic part of the Second World War. And we have the bombings, like you said, fire bombings on civilians in Germany, German cities. And they were actually, the orders to the Royal Air Force was that you must bomb civilians. You must bomb civilian workers. And, well, that's evidence. Because it was written orders from Bomber Harris and ultimately Winston Churchill himself. But no trial.
No.
He said you must commit war crimes. Not in that way, but you must bomb civilian workers.
Yes, exactly. So, because the motive for doing this was to break the morale and break the soul of the German soldiers. And to break the whole German nation's soul, you could say. So it was not military targets. It was hit their wives, hit their sons and daughters instead of hitting the military themselves.
Yeah. And in the case of the workers' home or nearer to each other, so if you bomb that, you can create a firestorm, like in Dresden and other places. So it was, that's evil, actually.
That's really evil. But compared to the Holocaust trademark, it is, what do you know, unicorns and stars and happiness.
Yeah, yeah. Winston Churchill was the savior of Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are those who believe that even if it were not true that the Holocaust was for real, the question is irrelevant today and hurts us more than it does any good bringing it up. How do you reason here?
Believe me when I say that I would definitely want to be able to not talk at all about the Holocaust. From my point of view, this is something that belongs to the past. I mean, even if the Holocaust was true, it has nothing to do with our struggle of today. It happened almost 100 years ago in another country and in another time. Instead, I would like to be able to talk about the actual problems we got today and how we want to solve these problems. I want to talk about the future. I want to talk about our visions, how what we could do for society and for our people, about what we fight for and what we want to create. However, I am not the one dictating the rules of the game, since I am not the one that owns the medias and the banks. Instead, I have to accept the playground we get and do the most out of it. And with this reality, the Holocaust question must be one of our key questions. Because even if we don't mention a word about the Holocaust, we will get accused of it. We will be portrayed like almost the architects behind it. And every time you face this under-the-belt kind of emotional rhetorics, you will win more by being offensive than by being passive. You will earn more being proactive than being reactive. You never win by cocking or getting surprised. That will only make you look weak, and then the enemy gets the upper hand. It's better to attack. So instead of trying to avoid it because it will come up, instead of trying to backing down from it and say that you apologize for it, blah, 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 it is better to state the truth with your back raised, that the Holocaust is a big, fat lie. The Holocaust also has a very high propaganda value. It is one of the system's sharpest swords to use against us, since it is being hammered hard into the mind of our people, or at least the older generations. I would say that there probably are tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, or even millions of people living in the Nordic countries today that sympathize with our political views. If they read our path or anything, they think this sounds really sane, this sounds really good. But at the same time, they believe that Hitler was a monster. And since Hitler were not a Nazi and we are Nazis, also we must be monsters. And therefore, they overall get a negative view of us, even though they sympathize with what we stand for and what we are doing. So, and also, if people understood that the Holocaust, that has been a big part of their whole worldview, a religion of theirs, if they understand that this is a hoax, then they, of course, also will start questioning other things. What more does the establishment lie about? In whatever ways more have they fooled you? Actually, we have several members in the Nordic resistance movement today that joined us first after they realized that the Holocaust was a scam. And even though this is a massive task ahead of us, if we were to take this weapon away from the system, or even just get the sword a little bit blunt, then there is no limit what gains we would get. If we were to succeed with getting the majority of the Nordic people to stop believe in the Holocaust hoax, we would get a massive step closer to victory. I'm 100% sure of that.
And I being one of them, actually. The Jay question and the Holocaust question was, well, it was a mental barrier. When I came through, then I realized everything. So, but you say that people that realize that the Holocaust is a hoax will also start questioning other things. Do the Nordic Resistance Movement also advocate other conspiracy theories like Flat Earth or Chemtrails?
No, we don't. On the opposite, we can say we believe that these crazy thin foil hat theories actually destroys people's trust for us, and that we would have been way much better off without them. And I guess that this could be a topic for a whole other show. We have done topics on this in Swedish ledarperspektiv. But there are huge differences between these theories and the Holocaust, because the Holocaust is not built up by any actual proof. And also, if we get people to understand that there is no proof behind the Holocaust, it would be a huge game changer for our movement. But Flat Earth, on the other hand, and other stupid things, first of all, they are impossible to find out sound evidence for. And secondly of all, they would not change near as much for us, even if it was the truth and we got people to believe it. So there is an enormous difference between these other crazy theories and the Holocaust that actually is a conspiracy.
I must say that I think it's brave of you to bring these questions up, and because we do know that when we air a leadership perspective, we reach Americans and other people, and that they are more into that sort of questions than Swedes are. It's more common, very much more common in the US, for example. So maybe we lose all our international listeners now. What do you think?
I do not believe so. And even if we lose 100 listeners that actually believes that the Earth is flat, then if we just get 10 people to listen to this that maybe not are National Socialists, that maybe believes in the Holocaust and so on, then it would be worthy of mentioning it. So, yeah. And as said, we probably will get back to all these other conspiracies in some other episode where we can elaborate more on these questions.
Yeah, or maybe we lose 10 and gain 100 because it still exist many people that do not want to be affiliated with Flat Earth and crazy theories like that.
Mm.
So people that we scare away when we address these questions. So
yeah, maybe.
Yes. In many countries, it is illegal to deny the Holocaust. Why do you think this is so? And what are the laws in the Nordic countries?
In the Nordic countries, so far, it is legal to stand up for the truth concerning the Holocaust. There has actually very recently been a new law proposal on Iceland to make it illegal. And even though it is not illegal in Finland to deny the Holocaust, it was still used against us when they stated arguments to ban us. So it is probably just a question of time, or maybe a question of our success to advocate the question before it will be illegal also here. And the reason why they make it illegal is just like with every other repression, out of desperation. That is also why Spreaker shut us down. That is also why we're not allowed to have any bank accounts and so on. Because when they feel and understands that they can't win over us in an honest fight, then they cheat, then they use repression, then they do whatever it takes against us. And since the Holocaust is a very, very easy to tear apart, and since it would affect the world order massively if Holocaust were to be tear apart in front of the masses. I mean, if they had strong evidence, if they had good arguments, they would have used it. And then they would have quieted all the doubters for once. But now when they don't have any proof, now when they see that they are losing in logic debates, they make it illegal instead and throw the disbelievers in jail.
When we talk about the Jewish question and that this question must be resolved, we do not mean that we want to annihilate all Jews. Does it matter the Holocaust has existed or not?
We want to repatriate the Jews, and we want to take away them from their power positions in the world. And this is, of course, not the same thing that we want to max extinct them. We are not monsters, we are not evil, we are not full of hate without the possibility to love. On the opposite, we are caring and altruistic people that wants to save our race. And of course, we do not want to see other people suffer unnecessarily. And with our struggle, we are actually opposing the genocide of our own people. Just as I said that the activist in Stockholm was trying to display with this stop the Holocaust of our people. And also can be said that the truth always matters. And the truth in this case is that the Holocaust is a hoax, and that we do not have as any of our goals to realize the Jewish fairy tales.
So if you then want to close the door on the Lügenmaus who whine about the Holocaust and solve the Jewish question once and for all, what should you do then?
Finally, I can use the catchphrase of Leadership Perspective again. Join or support your local National Socialist organization. I mean, the first way to solve things, actually no matter what problem it is that should be solved, is to address the problem. People must first understand that there is a problem before you can start to solve. And the masses of today, they do not even understand that there is such thing as a Jewish question. And even more so, they do not have a thought on that there is a possibility that the system lies about a thing like the Holocaust. So first, we must inform them. Let's do whatever we can to learn the masses about the Jew question, to learn the masses about the Holocaust. Then, after that, we can start talking about the final solution.
Yes, very good. And with that said, we end the Leadership Perspective for this time. And questions and suggestions on topics for future episodes of Leadership Perspective can be sent to info@nordicresistancemovement.org. We do also appreciate both negative and positive feedback. Please spread this episode on social medias and help the Nordic Resistance Movement in any way you can. And you can read more on our webpage, nordicresistancemovement.org. As we said in the introduction, the episodes will now be published every other month. And the next episode will therefore be published on Wednesday, the 28th of April. See you then, and bye.
Take care, everyone. Goodbye.